Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 Joycast. In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited to make this Joycast possible. For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool in the Opera.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of The Fool and the Opera. On the show tonight, we've actually got a quite an interesting lineup for you. The title for this week is A President, A Pot Plant and 100 Heifers. It'll all make sense by the end of the show, hopefully. On the show today, I've actually got Joy President Stephen Duns, who happens to be a very well-travelled man and actually quite passionate about opera as well. So I'll have a chance to sort of pick his brains about all the different opera houses around the world and all the different productions that we've had in Australia over the years as well. So he's seen quite a few, and so we'll be able to get to have a chat with him and see what is really sort of striking operas for him over the years. And we'll also have a little chat about with him about the Joy Survey, which we've just recently issued, that we're actually looking at community issues and what matters to you. So if you have something you'd like to say to us during the show, by the way, you can always SMS us 0427 JOY 949. There's the phone 96992949. I've got Nick on front desk at the moment, but Moonwalking Jerry will be floating around somewhere as well, or sliding around as you do when you're moonwalking. And there's the email onair@joy.org.au. so I'd love to hear from you. And we've also got later up in the show coming up, we've got one of the men of Diatomic Productions, Greg Elridge. He's tackling the story of Helen of Troy. He's actually well known for sort of redoing old stories and giving them new interpretations. So we'll have a chat with him to see what he's doing with this current production. It's La Belle Helene, or the Helen of Troy story. It's the face that launched 1,000 ships, and you can check it out on the blog at the moment. I just posted up joy.org.au/The Fool in the Opera. It's quite an interesting little face. I don't know how that launched 1,000 ships, but anyway, this week I went to see Xerxes, and I thought I'd open up with a track from Xerxes, but not the usual as you'd expect. We're going to play a chilled out remix version just to ease you into the program today. It's from the Paul Schwartz album, as you know, that I quite like them. It's Aria 3, this one, from Metamorphosis, and it's Obra, this one, and it's quite a beautiful song about a pot plant. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. On The Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9. It's me here, Dan Vo, your guest, as you know, the fool part of The Fool in the Opera. Now, on today's show, as the opera part of the opera, I've got a very special guest. His name is Stephen Duns. He's the Joy President, but he's also a partner of SuccessWorks, which is an organization that provides training in appreciative inquiry and systems thinking. He's also a very well-travelled man, and he's seen opera from many a balcony or a box from all around the world. So we're going to talk to him about his travels as well and the opera that he's seen over the many years. Thanks for joining me, Stephen.
Thank you, Dan. Lovely to be here.
Now, we were talking before about when you were 18, you know, you got to see quite a few operas, which is something that not too many 18-year-olds kind of indulge in.
Absolutely. And not only did I see them, they were sort of, you know, the perfect seats. A very dear friend of mine was on the ABC, Clive Stark, and his partner, Jeffrey, was never interested in going to the opera. It was all too hard and finished too late. He wanted to be in bed in time to get up for work. So so Clive took me along, and it was always opening nights, and we had to get dressed up in the dress suit, which is always fun, and I met a whole heap of really interesting people, and saw a whole tranche of fabulous operas. Because then then Clive had to go and review them for the ABC as well.
That would have been interesting to be able to see opera with a reviewer and kind of get an intimate knowledge of exactly whether it was good or not. Did you, when you first started going to see opera, did you have that understanding already of that sort of music?
No, not really. And I was thinking, you know, you call yourself the fool in the opera. I feel as though I'm a bit like the fraud in the opera. I love opera, and probably in terms of music has the ability to sort of transport one from to a higher place. I think an opera is the form of music that does that to me, but I'm not very well informed about it. So we've got the fool and the fraud on the opera side.
That's a good start.
That's right.
Well, in terms of when you were seeing these operas with Clive, what, do you remember some of the things that he would sort of point out to you as the things to look for that would make a good production?
No, not really. That's a great question, but no, we had much more fun talking to people rather than listening to the operas. We did, of course, you know, love the operas,
yeah.
And it was great fun. But no, he used to we just go along and we chat and we talk, and then he'd go off and do his review, you know, the next day or something. And I was rarely a part of the construct of the review. So I mean, we obviously would talk about the performances and the production and what we liked about them. But yeah, no, I didn't get any particularly good pointers as to what to look for.
Well, in terms of all the things that you saw then, what was it for you that kind of made you want to keep on coming back to the opera?
Yeah, I guess it's that. It is that sense of... there's a couple of things. First of all, it's that sense of being really beautiful melodies that are sung supremely well, that really do take you to another place. And I think that that's a wonderful experience about opera. And then there's a bit more. I mean, there's such a lot of colour and movement. It's just sort of hugely entertaining. And so I guess it's sort of almost, for me, it is the peak of art of, you know, our opera. And so it's that sort of exhilaration of when it works really well.
So, of course, having seen many operas, have you seen an opera where it didn't work very well?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And actually probably quite a few, really, because I don't always just go to the sort of the big opera houses as well. But actually, even I must confess, the last opera, I think, no, perhaps not, but anyway, a recent opera I saw in Melbourne, it was diabolically awful. it was just bad singing and bad production, and it was, I vowed I would not go back to that particular opera company.
Oh, I don't know if I dare ask what
no,
it was.
No, you better not. Starts with V. But
I'm not going to go there.
That's
okay,
right.
So
okay. Let's talk about the good ones. That's much better.
Yeah, let's talk about the good ones, because let's talk about your first opera, because this one is, I haven't seen a production of it yet, but I've heard the music and it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, Dido and Aeneas. It is a very lovely opera, a very accessible opera as well. So it's a great one to start with. And yeah, lots of a beautiful music sort of throughout. It's not too long. Mm-hmm. It's not sort of that endless screeching and screaming. It's the melodies are easily recognizable. So yeah, it's a wonderful wonderful opera.
I mean, having said that, I think there are three screechy kind of characters in it, the witches.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but they're meant to screech. That's all right.
Which is actually quite appropriate, because the last time we had someone in talking about Dido and Aeneas was when Cameron Menzies came in to talk from the Lyric Opera of Melbourne, and we've got Greg Eldridge coming up a little bit later in the show, right, as well. So there's a bit of a connection there.
That's right. But,
was that the moment that made it for you? Seeing that opera, is that what? Because a lot of people who kind of see an opera and they kind of go, oh, that's really not for me, it might have just been a bad production.
Yeah.
But they've decided not to go ever again based on that one production.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and, you know, opera, like wine or scotch, two of my favourite things in the world, is very different. So you might... I'm not a big Mahler or Wagner fan at all, but love, you know, Puccini, Mozart is probably my favourite composer, and Strauss, which is a bit more screechy, I guess. So there's a whole heap of things that I like, and there's a whole heap of stuff that I don't like. And yes, if you happen across one as your first one as something you don't like, then that would be unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worth keeping on going.
Tell us a little bit about Strauss. What is it about Strauss that appeals to you?
Well, I think I'm not a big fan of modern music in that sense, or sort of 20th century. But there is something, the way that he writes for the female voice is just extraordinary, really quite amazing. And so there are some operas and some, and you know, Strauss's Four Last Songs is probably one of my favorite bits of music of all time. Although I get into trouble because Zach, my partner, says that I've got too many favourites. So everything's a favourite, but they really are stunningly beautiful. It's the excellence, I think it is, of the writing, and writing for the female voice in a way which is probably, my view, unsurpassed.
So tell me about the aria that we're about to play then, which is a Strauss piece from Elektra.
I can't remember which one we've given. Why don't we talk about it after?
Okay, sure. Well, this is an unknown track from Strauss. Right. See if you can guess what it is. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. And my guest today is Stephen Duns, president of Joy 94.9. And we're going to have a chat with him a little bit about the Joy server that's just been launched. But before we do, we've guessed that the aria from Elektra was something to do with her plotting.
Yeah, she carries the conscience and for revenge for her father's murder. And then she plots to have her brother take revenge, and I'm pretty sure that that's part of the plotting.
She's hatching a plan, but so cunning, you right. Pop a talon and call it a weasel. Now, we were talking about how the music is, you know, quite heavy. You're saying it's heavy going. Strauss is quite heavy going.
It can be, yeah. Not always. So there's Die Fledermaus, which is another Strauss opera, which is much more accessible. Elektra's pretty heavy going, but really wonderful. I think another one that's fabulous, we were just chatting, was Salome, is a beautiful opera, much easier to get into. But once you get into Strauss, then... they're all lovely, really.
Mm. Yeah. Now, Strauss was from Europe. I think, where was it again? It's somewhere in Germany.
Yeah,
German man.
He's German, yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever seen opera in Germany?
Yeah, I went to Berlin, and there was a time, a period of my life when I was, my partner was an absolute Strauss nut. I was living in London, and we used to travel for weekends away around Europe, because it's easy to do that when you're living in London. And we did. We went to Berlin, especially to see a Strauss opera, and it was exceptional. Exceptional. In fact, I think it was Die Fledermaus. It was either that or Ariadne auf Naxos.
Mm. Tell me about the many opera houses that you've seen.
Well, I'm not sure about many, because I lived in Europe. It was an easy thing to do. So, you know, there's Paris, there's a few in Italy, there's Prague, there's Berlin, Stockholm, and at one stage, my job allowed me to travel around a lot as well, and so I was often had nothing, you know, not much to do in the evening, and was able to make use of being in different places. So that was. That was really lovely. And then, of course, in London as well, I subscribed to the English National Opera in the Colosseum. That's where I saw my genuinely most favourite production ever. And here we go. My partner will say he had another favourite. And that was, they did a production of The Magic Flute. by Mozart, and I think it's just a stunningly beautiful opera. There's some really fantastic moments in there, and that particular production was really, it was quite avant-garde and quite different. The lead male singer was gorgeous.
And always helps,
it helps a lot, yeah. and spent quite a lot of his time, a lot of the time with his shirt off. So it was really, you know, it was a good thing to see. But yeah, really exciting. I enjoyed that enormously.
Does the actual opera house itself sort of create more or less of a sense of, you know, does it make it more enjoyable?
Yeah, what an interesting question. I used to avoid Covent Garden in London, partly because it was so snooty, and you could go to the Colosseum, which I enjoyed much more. But certainly Covent Garden has an air about it. I mean, the Paris Opera House is just, you know, spectacularly beautiful and wonderful. And so I think when you go somewhere like the Paris Opera House, which is just so sublime, then that certainly has an impact as well. So many things have an impact as well. In fact, I'm just now recalling we were in Dresden and saw a beautiful, beautiful opera in Dresden as well, and that's a really interesting city. Yeah.
Because the interesting thing is, of course, with each city, you have a different type of audience, and different audiences around the world, correct me if I'm wrong, but they react differently to the different operas, or the way that they applaud, or the way that they just, you know, interact with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
So is there some things that, you know, you took from London, you took it to Dresden, and they kind of just looked at you and went, oh, that's terrible, you don't do that during the opera? Or, you know, did you applaud between arias or weren't allowed to applaud between arias?
Yeah, I don't remember making any huge gaffes, although there was a very entertaining time. I think it was either Turandot or Madame Butterfly, but someone died, someone killed herself. and I'd been working really hard, and I was up in the gods, and I nodded off. And just as she sort of shoved the knife in, I woke up because I started to fall forward. And I screamed out. And fortunately, it was just the right time because everyone thought I screamed out because I was so moved by the occasion. But actually, I was just thought, oh, shit, I'm falling down. But actually, I didn't.
And how did the audience react to that?
No, but that was all right because it was as though I was just moved by the occasion, yeah. So it's entirely appropriate.
Well, now, while we talk about audiences, let's talk a little bit about Joy 94.9 audiences. and
lovely
beyond
segue.
That,
yes.
Our community as well.
Sure.
And one of the things, of course, that the station's just done at the moment is has just launched a survey to sort of find out what it is to our community that really matters, the issues that really matter.
Sure. Well, yeah, and I guess the board at the beginning of the year decided we wanted to do something just a little bit different. And Joy has been around now for quite a long time, 15 years. And we decided that we've established ourselves, you know, quite strongly as a voice in the community. And that's a great thing. And we thought, well, actually, maybe we should now be going a bit further and become a voice of the community and really start to take a position on various issues that are affecting our community. So what we decided was, well, first of all, we need to find out from our member base, is that a sensible thing for us to do? Do they want us to do that? So the survey asked that question. And then we said, okay, then, well, what are the big issues? The option is there to select from a range of issues and also add some other issues. And then our idea is that once we get feedback from members, we're also actively seeking non-members as well. So people who are you know, in sort of partner organizations like some of the other, you know, Greek and Gay, Golden Valley Pride, we're working with them to get them to send it out to their membership as well. So it's not just about listeners of Joy, it's also others, because it'd be interesting to find out, you know, who the non-listeners and what the non-listeners think as well. So we're trying that. And once we've decided, okay, what are the really big issues, then we'll come up with a position and we'll work with organizations like VGLRL and other sort of gay rights organisations and organisations in the community to decide, well, what's the position that we should be on there? And I guess where this came from was a couple of years ago, there was a boy who wanted to take his same-sex partner to the school dance up in Brisbane. And I thought we should be making a stance on this. Mm. This is an important issue. And it was almost as if the media was sort of scrambling around trying to find someone, and there wasn't really a lot of people willing to get out there. And that's the sort of thing that we should be able to say, actually, well, there is a stance here in the gay community, and that the GLBTIQ community does have a view, and this is what we think it is.
Mm. And I suppose that one of the things that we've been hearing about from community organisations that are responding to this already, they're sort of asking whether or not, in terms of the advocacy, is Joy looking to take an advocacy role? And in doing that, are we going to be sort of competing against their funding, or are we going to be doing this in partnership with them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And absolutely, the answer is yes. The intention is to take an advocacy role. I believe we already do that in many, many ways. We do very explicitly educate and inform as well as entertain. So that's already there. We don't necessarily believe we need funding to do this, so I don't think we'll be taking funding away from people. And absolutely, we would like to do it in partnership and in collaboration with other organisations, and which is the way we do a lot of things now anyway. Mm. But yeah, it's not about taking space away from someone else. It's about, and we wouldn't have a scarcity mentality. There's an abundance mentality. There's a whole heap of stuff that we can do, and advocacy is not limited. So let's all sing from the same hymn sheet and make a beautiful song.
I quite like that little, the way that you've created that analogy. That's great. Quite appropriate as well. So we can transition into the music as well very soon. So you can actually check out the details for the survey at joy.org.au/survey. And now, there's a few people who listen to the show who are actually international as well. Would we be accepting and be interested in responses from people who listen to Joy internationally as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So whether you are from Melbourne or regional Victoria or in Australia or international, in fact, please do check out the survey and please do participate, because your feedback will be very important to us. So it's joy.org.au/survey. Now, we've got a track in here. It's another Strauss, isn't it?
No. This isn't Strauss. This is the Magic Flute.
Oh, okay.
This is Mozart. I'm pretty sure, unless you put the wrong one in there. No, this is the Magic Flute. This is not a particularly, maybe not a typically played piece from the Magic Flute, but it's a really lovely bass aria, and there are fewer bass arias than perhaps other parts, and so I think that it's just an interesting one that I really like, and I think Mozart writes well for bass.
Okay, you're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I love how the music ends so sublimely and beautifully. And then we have a service announcement that sort of jolts you back into the moments of awareness, I suppose, is the best way I can put it right now.
But there was a challenge to the beauty. Ray walked in and said it was a dirge. So and I just wanted to make sure that everyone is aware that at Joy we don't just play gay boy market music.
I don't think I've... I have managed to do that somehow on the show before. You know that Mika's song, his first song. Does anyone remember his first
Relax,
song?
Relax, is that the one?
No, there's one after that then. Grace Kelly.
Grace Kelly, yeah.
Which, you could potentially classify as, what did you call it again? Gay boy.
Gay boy, market me.
Well, that's actually based off the court, the Barber opera, the Barber of Seville.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I just love the pause I just got then. Now, you're on The Fool and the Opera. My guest today is Stephen Dunns, President of Joy, and also now joining us in the studio, who is calling our music a bit of a dirge, is is Greg Eldridge, who is a longtime collaborator with Diatomic Productions, which is a vehicle for young theatre makers. And he's been applauded for his adaptation of an old story, The Picture of Dorian Gray. And so today we're going to have a chat with him about yet another old story that he'll be putting a new spin on, which is La Belle Helene, which is a production that's being put on by Lyric Opera of Melbourne. So thanks for joining us as well, Greg.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Thank you for
having me. That's all right. Now, of course, we were talking a little bit before about Dido and Aeneas, which was the last production from Lyric Opera of Melbourne. And what's happening with this current production, which was amazing as well. It had some amazing costumes, some beautiful singers, and...
Oh, absolutely. I think Cameron Menzies, who was directing the last piece, and I was assistant directing that, did an amazing job. He's a phenomenal artistic visionary for the stage, and this new one is a lot bigger. Dido, as some people know, is only sort of 50 minutes or so, but this Offenbach's just on 2.5 hours, cast of thousands, a huge challenge, and very much looking forward to putting it out to the public, I think.
I always thought Offenbach would be a great name for a dog. Bark and Offenbach will be my dogs, I think.
Well, we had, as a child, we had Sebastian.
Yeah.
It was Johann Sebastian Bach.
Oh, that's good.
That's very clever. So now, I thought I'd pop up the image for you as well that we found of Helen of Troy, which she looks like, what did you call it?
A petulant 5-year-old who has not gotten her own way.
Very close to ours, I think. No, she's a lovely girl, our Helen. Certainly not petulant at all. We've been very lucky with all of our casting, I think, to have found some incredible performers who have been happy to sort of step up and take the challenge of putting on a full-length opera on sort of 6-7 weeks rehearsal, which is a huge effort for anyone. But we have a tremendously talented young singer, Kiralee Blythman, who's studying at the VCA, who's come on board as our Helen, and just phenomenal voice.
Mm. Now, in the story, because as part of the title today, we said it would be a president, a pot plant, and 100 heifers. You're going to have to explain the 100 heifers for us.
Sure. How do we do the 100 heifers? At the very end of Act 3, Helen is asked to go off and try and help out Venus, who's put a curse because... person that she wants to fall in love with, Helen, hasn't let her do it, and she's encouraged to go off and sacrifice 100 heifers to Venus, which, you know, I've always done when I've been unlucky in love, and it's worked very well for me, so it makes sense, I suppose.
Have you got 100 heifers on the stage? How have you got around that in terms of the production?
Yeah, look, there have been a number of restrictions on the way we'd like to present it, but look, I think I'm happy with, 24 amazingly talented, superb musicians rather than 100 heifers. We'll take what we can.
So how did you start with this production? Where did you take the story? Because it's a story that most people are very familiar with. It's been in movies and been written about again and again. So how did you start with the production?
Well, it's like a lot of the Offenbach operettas of sort of the middle and the late 19th century, what he aimed to do was to take stories that were reasonably well known, like that of Helen of Troy, starting the Trojan War, and make it ridiculous, make it farcical, and use it to sort of take the mickey out of the regime that was in power at the time. So this one was written to mock Napoleon and the Second Empire of France, which it managed to do very successfully. And so having this new English adaptation, we've tried our best to sort of take the mickey out of some of the things that are sort of going on with us, you know, not being overtly political or anything, just sort of gently taking the piss.
Mm. So what sort of costuming have we got? Like, are you putting it within the context of that period, or modernising it?
I think we're doing a bit of both, actually. Right? Yeah, how about having your cake and eating it? Because the piece itself is hugely breaking the fourth wall and is happy to make references to what was then the 19th century and what is now the 21st, we've got a mix of costuming. For the purists, you know, there'll certainly be plenty of, you know, leather breastplates and, you know, little Greek skirts and things. But I'm selling it well, aren't I? But there's also a very keen 21st century element to it, because a lot of what they're bringing up and ridiculing is still absolutely rife for ridicule today.
Mm. Well, I did get a look of a good look from Stephen when we heard about the Greek skirt. So
absolutely. Why not?
We've got to bring in the crowd somehow.
I'm trying to work out what in the 21st century would go well with a Greek skirt.
Not a lot, but you know, it's another challenge we've had.
Now, you brought in a CD.
Yes.
It's got music from the opera, I presume?
I hope so. We'll soon find out.
All right, so we'll play a bit and then we'll come back and you can explain for us what it's all about.
No, thank you so much.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. On The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. And that was a little bit of music from La Belle Helene. My guest today is Stephen Dunns, the president of Joy, and I've also got Greg Elridge, who's director of La Belle Helene for Lyric Opera of Melbourne.
Hooray.
Now, we're just having a quick chat in the interim about the last production that was in Melbourne, which is sort of, for me, way back when. I would have been a bub at one. So.
Yeah, no, I would have been two, so you've done all right.
I was probably there.
The last time Belle Helene was done in Victoria, as far as my research has told me, was a production in the 80s, which was with, I think, the old Victoria State Opera. Certainly there exists a little bit of sort of archival photography and things that we've been able to have a look at, and, you know, some we can take on and some we can learn from. And, yeah, I think it's good that it hasn't been performed sort of recently. It's not like one of these... I was going to say the magic flute, but, you know.
It's full of dirges anyway.
Yeah, there's some beautiful... You just chose the wrong one. That's all right.
Separate you two.
It's one of those pieces that isn't performed very often, which is such a shame, because the overture to it is one of the most famous in French repertoire. It's played all the time as a sort of standalone work. So I think for a lot of people who come to see it, they'll feel a sort of familiarity with the music because they've heard little bits of it, but not the whole pieces.
But your production, of course, is in English.
Yes.
Which is quite interesting because you've had to rewrite some of it.
Yes. That was a decision we took early on that we wanted to do it in English, ostensibly so that, you know, an audience can better appreciate what's going on. There aren't surtitles, and it had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that we had 6 weeks to rehearse, and French is a bastard of a language to to learn in that time. But Frederica Cunningham, who's a rising soprano, and I sort of locked ourselves in a room for a week and a half and did a bit of translating and a bit of adapting and a bit of trying to make words fit into music that wouldn't let it. it was a fun time.
How long did that take, that process? Did you have to go over a line over and over and again until you got it right?
Well, I did. I'm not sure whether that's because I'm not very good, but some of it, I spent a lot of time listening to the music sort of anyway, just to get myself familiar with the melody and the story. And so I found myself sort of inserting words that had nothing to do with the story, but seemed to go right. So that when we got down to doing it, there was at least a skeleton that we could work with. A week and a half that I won't forget nor repeat in a hurry.
Well, I mean, the thing about this is, of course, is that it's going to be something that's going to be new for a lot of people as well. So in terms of just for a beginner coming into this, how accessible is it going to be for them?
I think it's almost the perfect piece for people who are just coming into opera or operetta. Offenbach was around, you know, most prolifically in sort of the 1860s and 70s. And so he sort of predates Gilbert and Sullivan by 15 or 20 years. And a lot of what he did is essentially Gilbert and Sullivan in France. It's very light, it's very easy, the story's very silly, the melodies are amazingly catchy. I haven't slept for a couple of weeks, you know, not through stress, I promise, but because the snatches of songs have been stuck in my head. And melodically, I think that there's a lot in common with the Gilbert and Sullivan or the light operetta of maybe Strauss or someone of that ilk.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a wonderful production and certainly something, well, you've sold it to me.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. I'm interested in your decision not to have surtitles because my experience of opera sung in English is that it's not necessarily that much more understandable than opera sung in a different language. And it, in fact, at the E&O, at the Coliseum in London, they sing in English and they have surtitles.
Yes, I think, depending on how we run with the show, we might have to rush some surtitles in or maybe have someone standing with placards.
The Bob Dylan style.
Exactly. As it goes, yeah.
Well, that's going to be, I think, the great note that we're going to end it on. We've got a track that we'll be playing out with. You would...
Sure, yeah. This is... this is the Patriotic Trio, which comes in Act 3. It's almost a direct Mickey take of William Tell. A very similar thing occurs there. Essentially, we have two of the kings having a bit of an argument over what should be done, and then the priest, who's always the bass, of course, comes in and starts to sort of... put his oar in a little bit. It's a wonderful piece. One of my favourites.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining me both in the studio, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And I'll catch you next week. I suppose, as Offenbach would say, same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel. Or if Offenbach was a dog, it'd be whoa, 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 whoa. You've been on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Au sein de ton ménage, au sein de ton ménage, tu te fiches pas mal de ton pays. Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.